I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, well, it was fun while it lasted. The two other Bob Fergusons have officially dropped out of the governor's race, one of them saying he did so under duress. Meanwhile, we're going to take a deeper dive into the hypocrisy of Attorney General Bob Ferguson's press conference about the whole ordeal. Plus, we're going to be joined by a Bellevue landlord who found himself at the center of an international squatting controversy. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. A lot to get to today, per the usual. Do we ever have a day where we don't have a lot to get to? It's just news galore. I can't even remember what a slow news day looks like anymore. It's been so many years. No more three Bob Fergusons, or as Kyle T put it in the comments, no mas tres Fergies. Yes, so just before the deadline yesterday to withdraw your name, before it would appear on a primary ballot, the two other Bob Fergusons in the race for Washington governor opted to do so. I mean, clearly they listened to our show yesterday and thought, well, if Brandi thinks I ought to take my name out, then I must take my name out. No, I'm sure they made these decisions independently. In fact, I had heard that one of the Bobs made it pretty early in the day on Monday. I'll get to his statement in a moment because it was actually pretty wonderful. And then, of course, Bob Ferguson, the Attorney General Bob Ferguson, let's clarify, came out, had a press conference flanked by a former King County prosecutor threatening legal action. Threatening to go after these Bobs if they didn't withdraw their names. Threatening to go after Glenn Morgan, the conservative government watchdog who set up this whole thing. And ultimately asking for special treatment from the Secretary of State's office, which we'll get to in a moment. You know, yesterday was Bob Ferguson got his day as the victim. He got his day as the victim yesterday. We covered it. I gave my whole spiel about why I thought the names should be withdrawn and how it was funny, but it wasn't right morally, and it also, I think, would backfire. But now we move on from that, and I want to take a deep dive into some of the things that Bob Ferguson said at this press conference that just show what a horrible leader he would be who only looks out for himself and only looks out for his best interests and only cares about law and order when he's the one who's a victim. First, I want to read again this, I love this so much, this press release from Bob Ferguson, one of the other Bob Fergusons, the first one to decide on Monday to withdraw his name. Because I love how much this legit sounds like a real candidate. Totally, he's treating it. He was treating it like that. But some of the things he says, I think, are very valid. So this from one of the other Bob Fergusons. Hello, fellow Washingtonians. It is with a heavy heart and under duress that I am withdrawing from the governor's race. For 20 years, I wore the uniform of the U.S. Army and defended this great nation. I am and will always be grateful for the opportunity to serve and work alongside great many Americans that also wanted to protect this country. At the time, little did I know the greatest threat to my family and myself would come from another that also carries my name. Damn, shots fired. After my candidacy was announced, I was faced with harassment and legal action if I did not withdraw from the race. I was publicly labeled a, quote, threat to democracy by another candidate and his supporters. In a typical, hypocritical fashion, this other candidate's actions are the true threat to democracy. I believe this shows that the other candidate fears he has not effectively done enough to stand out, or that he thinks voters are not competent enough to think for themselves. The threats made to my family and I, along with the shady tactics used to deliver messages, do not frighten or intimidate me. It is unfair to my family, friends, and supporters to deal with bullish behavior by someone who is too afraid to stand toe to toe with me. For that reason, I rescind my candidacy. At this time, I do not offer an endorsement for any other candidate. I hope that every voter will use logic and reason when casting their votes, and that you choose who is best for you, your family, and your values. I feel that the current administration and all associated with it have shown numerous times that they do do not care about the voice of the people. They continuously feed us scraps to keep us content while only pushing their personal agenda. Car tabs, anyone? I do not think that the current Attorney General will be any different as governor. Our state is the finest in the nation, but hangs precariously on the edge of sinking under poor leadership. I wish you all the best and urge you all to make your voices heard. Sincerely, Robert Ferguson. I want him to be governor. I love this. I mean, what a well thought out statement, and someone who fought for the country. And he makes a good point there about, you know, fights for the country, defends the country, and then is labeled a threat to democracy by Attorney General Bob Ferguson. And I've already said my piece on the thing. It was obviously a shtick to design to cipher votes away from the Attorney General. So I don't support it for that reason. But I think he brings up some good points there in, and Bob Ferguson, when you talk about threat to our democracy, I mentioned it briefly on the show yesterday, but I really feel like I should have hammered it home a little bit more instead of being so sappy and feeling bad for Bob. Where was Bob Ferguson when our right to initiative and referendum was under attack from the Washington State Democratic Party for the majority of last year? Where was Bob Ferguson when we were being protested and harassed for lawfully gathering signatures for a referendum? Where was he when there were tip lines put out encouraging harassment and stalking of signature gatherers? So you say you care about our democracy and protecting our democracy, and you're going to stand up for our democracy when it's at peril, but only, I guess, when it benefits you? That's not someone who I have any faith in as a leader. You know, and this is someone who erodes our constitutional rights. Someone who, in the case of Tim Iman, used every ounce of power and influence and millions in taxpayer funds to go after a political enemy and ruin his personal life and his professional life. And is now, if you read between the lines, probably going to try to do that to Glenn Morgan. So look, is the stunt with the three Bobs bad? Yeah. But in comparison to all the things that Attorney General Bob Ferguson has done or has not done when he should have, it pales in comparison, truly. So now that this is behind us, I want to focus in on some things that Bob Ferguson said yesterday. I reminded you just before our show came on yesterday, he had a press conference at Kerry Park in Seattle, which I kind of laughed because he was booed at Kerry Park by someone, like jeered at. I'm like, wow, in the heart of Seattle on Queen Anne, nonetheless, Queen Anne Hill, around all the liberal elites, Bob Ferguson got booed at Kerry Park. That was kind of funny. But so a few things. Let me first play this clip where, and he said over and over, I don't want them to be charged criminally. I don't want to go after these other two Bob Fergusons, but I will. Here's the moment.
If they do not do the right thing, though, and they are surely aware of the legal implications, we will have no choice but to take more serious steps and ask local prosecutors to do the right thing and pursue further action.
So because it's him, because it's his political future in peril, he would, as Bob Ferguson, the Attorney General, who has all sorts of allies in these prosecutors' offices, he would ask them to do the right thing and seek a Class B felony against these Bob Fergusons. An attorney general, the state's chief prosecutor, who doesn't give a damn about when you and I are victimized, he could not care any less. I think it's very fitting that the sirens are raging behind him. Just a small indicator of what Bob Ferguson and politicians like him have done to this state when it comes to public safety. I go back to Bob Ferguson now all of a sudden on the campaign trail saying he didn't support rolling back police pursuits. Meanwhile, he stayed silent on that issue for 3 years. How many people have been victimized by individuals driving stolen vehicles, committing smash and grab burglaries, hitting and killing innocent people on our roadways, using those stolen vehicles to perpetrate violent crime and police can't pursue them? Bob Ferguson hasn't shown for one moment that he cares about pursuing criminal charges or cares about law and order or justice when it's you and I, when it's the little peons. But when it's him, when he's the victim of a potential crime, he's going to hold a press conference at Kerry Park and he's going to call all the media to whine and complain about it and demand that something be done. That something be done for him. Do you see this? Do you see the hypocrisy of it? Please, even if you support Bob Ferguson, please, you have to see that he thinks he gets special treatment. All of us, we can get victimized, we could die. He doesn't care. But when it's him, special press conference with the city of Seattle behind him. How many times in the last 3, 4, 5 years as our public safety crisis absolutely spiraled out of control, could it have been incredibly advantageous for Bob Ferguson to stand up at a press conference as the attorney general and say, enough is enough. Enough is enough. We have record crime rates. The stolen vehicle crisis is out of control. We've got people dying at record rates with needles in their arms. Enough is enough. I'm the chief law enforcer of the entire state of Washington, and this is unacceptable. And we have to make sure that people aren't being victimized, that prosecutors are filing charges. We have to do something. He didn't do it once. Not once when it mattered the most. He didn't speak about police defunding. You know, the retail theft crisis happening. He didn't speak about it in 2020 when stores were being looted in downtown Seattle in the heart of the city he calls home. No, but when it was politically advantageous, a year and a half later, he started a retail theft task force. And what did he do? He had a press conference about how great he is in starting a retail theft task force a year and a half after it actually could have made a difference. The audacity. The audacity of this man. And again, he's in the right on the ballot issue. I've already said that. But the audacity of this man to threaten to go to prosecutors to seek felony charges when he's the victim, because he's worried about his political career and his dream upon dreams of being the governor. It is shockingly void of any semblance of self-awareness. It's really wild stuff. Man, I wish people could see past political ideology to see what these political elites think of themselves and think of us. There are Republicans out there who, I mean, they're not in this state, but other states who I'm sure are the same. It's wild. So one more thing, because he's above everyone else. He does believe inherently he's entitled to special treatment, right? Because these Bobs, that's their name, Bob Ferguson. Both of them, their legal true name. If they want to run a campaign for governor, truly, they have every right to. Now, if they're doing it to dupe voters and that can be proven, yes, that's a Class B felony. But they do have every right. If they want to mount even a last minute legitimate campaign, they have every right lawfully to do that. But at his press conference yesterday, when it wasn't clear whether the two Bobs would drop out under these threats, Bob Ferguson, the attorney general, said if they didn't, he would seek special treatment on the ballot from the Secretary of State, Steve Hobbs.
So number one, we're asking the Secretary of State to include the candidate occupations next to the three Bob Fergusons. Number two, we're asking that the Secretary of State have these other two Robert Ferguson's listed as Robert Ferguson with their middle initial or possibly their middle name as well. So I would be the only Bob Ferguson on the ballot. Number three, and especially important, after the drawing of straws on Friday afternoon, one of these Bob Fergusons will appear second on the ballot. The other will appear third on the ballot. And I appear number 13 on the ballot. So we're asking the Secretary of State to either move my name up, sort of second, essentially, above those two, or move them down below me. Either way, I'm good with either spot, right? But the three names should be together so any voter will see, wait a second, there's three Fergusons here. Something's going on.
So he wants special treatment. He wants something to be done for him that wouldn't be allowed for other people. You go through this process of drawing names. This happens in every race. There's 30 people in the race for governor, and that's what it is. It is basically a draw of the hat to see where you're going to end up on the ballot. He happened to end up below the other two Bob Fergusons. And if they hadn't dropped out, He wanted, he was hoping the Democratic Secretary of State would just take his name and boop, put it right above him. As if that would be fair to any of the other candidates in the race who have nothing to do with this debacle. And above that, he wants Attorney General next to his name, so people know. There's a reason why you cannot put the political title of someone next to their name on a ballot, because it indicates to voters, well, that's the incumbent, and there's this thought that that gives them an unfair advantage. So he was asking for, quite literally, an unfair advantage. This guy has no shame. This guy has no shame. And again, I don't feel like I need to continue to go back and preface it, that I think that he's right on the front that, you know, their names need to be taken off, and now they are. But now we can look back in hindsight and see how entitled he felt. How entitled he felt. You can break the rules for me. You can create special rules for me. I'm the victim. We're going to push to have these people prosecuted. This guy cannot be the governor. I don't care who you vote for. I mean, look, vote for who you want to vote for. Just not Bob Ferguson. But in all seriousness, if you want Democratic policies and you cannot foresee yourself voting for a Republican, maybe there's an issue you feel very strongly about, abortion, whatever it is, and you really feel like I'm just taking a moral stand, vote for another Democrat. Any person, every candidate of the 30 would be better than Bob Ferguson. Every single one of them. Vote for Mark Mullett. If you really are a tried and true blue Democratic voter, will never vote for a Republican, vote for Mark Mullett. Anyone else besides Bob Ferguson. Because this is a man who at his core believes he's better than you, believes he's more deserving than you, believes that he's above the law, and believes he is entitled to special treatment. It's truly insane. Now, there was another random question, but I do think it's related, that popped up at this press conference yesterday. Thank you, Chris Daniels with Como News. I'm going to play that coming up next. First, I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark challenge. Everyone needs insurance. Don't deal with it on your own when you could have a broker like First Mark Insurance that's been doing this for a long time. They're right here local, and you never have to pay them anything. So you're going to have a company working for you every step of the way, helping you make sure you have the right insurance at a price you can afford, and dealing with all your renewals moving forward, keeping you in the loop. You never pay them a dime. It really is a no-brainer. We have heard so many wonderful things from those of you who have taken the First Mark Challenge. Casey in Covington says, thank you for telling us to check out First Mark Insurance. I did the challenge after receiving a ridiculous renewal statement. We made the switch to policies with First Mark and walked away with slightly better homeowners insurance for the same price. And they managed to save us 37% on our auto quote for the exact same coverage. He says, right now, every dollar counts. Happy to join the First Mark family. And here's the other no-brainer thing about First Mark. You can do the First Mark challenge, and then you can decide, you know what? I think I'm just going to keep the insurance I have and not go through First Mark and use their carriers. But in the process, you can learn a lot. Like, do you have the right insurance? Do you have the right insurance at the right price? Are you paying for things you don't need? So if anything, at the end of the day, the First Mark Challenge is a tremendous learning opportunity about this crazy, confusing world of insurance that we're in. So take the First Mark Challenge today, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. They work for you. Not the insurance companies. All right, I teased yesterday on the show that we were going to have part two of our Undivided Goes to UW. We're going to save it for tomorrow, okay? The truth is that I have more work on the story I want to do. It's just so fascinating. It's so interesting. And I wanted to do it justice. And so I'm just not done with it yet. Okay. That's the truth. Just not done with the story yet. But we'll have that in depth. We went out to UW on a Friday around lunch with two Jewish individuals. And sat them down with signs in front of them and encouraged conversations. And we ended up having some really sparking some awesome productive conversations and some that weren't so productive. And so we're going to have that story on the show tomorrow. However, I do have a couple protest-related stories that I want to bring you today. So speaking of Bob Ferguson, I just wanted to bring this up because it infuriates me. So here he's at this press conference. He's got the media assembled. And he, again, he believes he's entitled to special treatment. He believes he gets to dictate. And this is a guy who has a terrible track record of transparency, has all sorts of public records, issues, etc. Long track record that has been covered extensively in the media. I'll give the Seattle Times, for instance, credit on that, that they've held Bob Ferguson accountable for his office and its failure on transparency. But anyway, so Chris Daniels used to be with King 5, now with Como News. He figures that he'll use this opportunity to ask Bob Ferguson a very timely and obvious question, and that is about what's happening on the campus of Bob Ferguson's alma mater, the University of Washington. Here's how Bob Ferguson responded.
Oh, we'll talk later then, I'm sure, but go give it a try anyway, Chris.
Yeah. You're a distinguished alumni at the University of Washington. You are the top prosecutor in the state. You want to be the governor. You know what's going on at the UW over the last couple of weeks. If you're elected governor, what would you do to find a solution there and make everybody happy?
Yeah, have a chat with you separately. We obviously have a very specific focus here. What I just will say is, look, as a graduate, all students have the absolute right to attend classes safely and experience a campus environment safely. That's fundamental. That has to be enforced. And so, but happy to have a further conversation with you about other details. But for right now, our focus is very clear, right, on what's in front of us.
Yeah. And then he continues to talk about the election issue. So you do realize, as the governor, if you hold a press conference, it's very likely every single time that the media is going to ask you about an unrelated question. And in this case, Bob Ferguson says, oh, well, Chris, I'll talk to you later about that. I'll answer your questions. I mean, students have a right to feel safe, but not willing to condemn, not willing to say, hey, you know, this is an unsafe environment. There's been some anti-Semitism. This is, he, as Chris pointed out, such a wonderfully worded question is that you're a distinguished alum. You want to be the next governor. You're the state's chief prosecutor. Anything at all to say about what's happening? And he gives this flaccid answer and then dismisses Chris about, let me tell you, media, what you're allowed to ask about. And you can't ask about that today. It's so indicative of who he'd be as governor. You guys, this would be miserable. This would be miserable. I believe it with every fiber of my being. And his silence on this issue at UW is just crazy. And not just that, you know, similar sentiments that have been popping up about that are just anti-Semitic really across the state. He doesn't have anything to say about that. And he wants to control the narrative. So he wants to control the media. So he, you know, in his kind of giggly way and, you know, snide way, just shut Chris down. Oh, I'm sure we could talk about that offline. Very curious the extent to which he was willing to talk to Chris Daniels about it offline. But this is easy stuff. Is it not easy for him to condemn like an occupied protest where people can't move freely? He knows what's happening. It's very Jay Inslee all a chop. Oh, chop? I haven't heard anything about that. That's news to me. It's like, okay, you're clearly lying because you're a coward and you don't want to talk about it. Can we have a governor who's willing to answer hard questions? Is that really so much to ask? It's crazy stuff. It's such a no-brainer for him, too, but it's all political ideology and, oh, I can't anger the far left wing. I need them, and I can't have them going after me like they're protesting Joe Biden. So I'm just going to keep that locked up and just, you know, shut Chris Daniels down. One more protest-related story today. So there's this issue of doxing, okay? I have really split feelings about the phrase doxing and what people consider doxing. I have a pretty high threshold for what doxing means. I think if you are putting someone's home address out there, that's doxing. I think if you're taking a private citizen who, you know, maybe you feel like wronged them, but they haven't been convicted of anything, and you are putting their name, their address, their employer out there in an effort to what? Have them harassed and intimidated and threatened, that to me is doxing. And I'm very much against that. Now, if you're a public figure, people still shouldn't be putting your personal address out there, your home address where your family lives. You know, that's wild stuff, whether you can find it, you know, through some sort of Google search or not. So, but then some people want to say, oh, doxing is telling people, gosh, you know, showing my face at these protests. We heard that over and over at the protests. People don't want to be doxxed. They're in a public space protesting, and they think that if they're on camera at the protest, they're being doxxed. Like, if you're that concerned about being seen at the protest, you probably shouldn't be at that protest. And we encountered this when we went to the University of Washington last Friday around lunch. You know, our crew were getting ready to set up for this segment that we're going to air tomorrow. And we're walking through and Nicole shouts at me, you know, and she says, this lady wants to talk to you. And we're getting followed through the bushes by this, you know, camp security who wants to talk to us. And everybody's directing us to a media tent in this encampment. And so we're weirded out by that. We're like, this is a public space. Why do I have to, as a member of the media, check in on your completely make-believe media tent to get, what, a credential from a completely make-believe, you know, encampment, occupied zone? It's very strange. So one of the things that was interesting, we walk up, we're with former State Senator Simon Sefcik, who came with us, and he decides to film this encounter of me walking up to the media tent, because at this point, we've been followed, we're thoroughly weirded out, and we want to ask them what the heck is going on. And they bring up the concern about doxing, and I had to point out why, coming from them, it is so hypocritical.
In this space where people are at heightened risk of being targeted, yeah. Like that's even
worse. Yeah, and I don't believe in doxing people either. Although I did, our friend Jonathan Cho was down here and people had signs with his address on it. So that,
I don't know anything about
that. I mean, it was all over signs and umbrellas with his address, so that feels a little contrary to the anti-doxing, like, desires.
I literally have no idea. I haven't heard.
Okay, so you wouldn't be in support of that, like putting a reporter's address on a sign or an umbrella?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you guys saw that, would you be willing to ask them not to do that?
Possibly. I haven't seen that, and I'm not, like, on the team that would handle that. This is just my opinion.
Doxing for thee, but not for me. And first of all, this encampment isn't a large area. You know, it's in the quad, but the actual place with tents is fairly small. I think that's a fair characterization, right, Nicole? Like, you can see across it. You can see everything from the center of the quad. And the idea that this young lady is telling me that she had no idea that there were dozens of signs and umbrellas with Jonathan Cho's address, home address, put on them, that she in the media tent is telling me she hadn't seen any, if she hadn't seen them in front of her face, and she hadn't seen any of the social media and the widespread sharing of the clips of Jonathan Cho being followed around with people holding signs with his cell phone number on them and umbrellas with his home address on them. So I don't believe that for one second. But again, when you're telling me we can't come up to a media tent after we've been followed and stalked around the encampment, and we're filming, and you're saying that that's doxing you, that was their assertion, that it's kind of a hostile act to record them in this public place because it's doxing them and they're worried for their safety if their faces are on camera, yet at the same time, dozens of them made signs with Jonathan Cho's home address. So yeah, doxing for thee, but not for me. Turns out there's a lot of rules that the people in those encampments don't want to abide by that they expect other people to abide by. Interesting how that hypocrisy works. All right, it's happening this weekend. Are you ready? It is the grand opening of phase 2 at Natchez RV Resort. We've been talking a lot about, first of all, it's just sort of a dream. I'm just spinning a dream in everyone's mind. You get done with work over here on a Friday and you want to escape the crazy and you've got a lot over at the Natchez RV Resort, luxury resort. It's got all the amenities. I mean, you can go wine tasting, miles of trails, anything, outdoor recreation, fishing and all of that. And you get to hang out there and be amongst like-minded people. We spoke with Tig, who is with Natchez RV Resort, and we asked him about phase 1. So when they opened lots for phase 1, they sold out really quickly. And I asked him, okay, for people who might be interested in buying a lot as part of phase 2 in the grand opening of that phase this weekend, who would they be living amongst?
It's an awesome group of people. I can't say better things. It's all very like-minded people. I'm sure a lot of them listen to your show. A lot of people still living and working over here in the greater Seattle area that just want that home base to go to, and they want quality. They want to keep it a resort and not just have it be a park. And it's very tough these days with RVers for them to find a place to go, especially a quality spot. This is one they own. They can treat it like a second home, have their big RV sitting over there. If they get off work on a Friday and feel like just shooting over there, they know it's an option. They can also, when they're not using the lot, we have a great rental program where we can put it into the rental pool and they can rent it back out or weekend to the general public and have them bring some money coming in for them when they're not using it.
Yeah, and when we say quality spot, I mean, you're talking about 300 days of sunshine, fishing, hunting, snow skiing, golf, river rafting, outstanding wine tasting and more all nearby. They have a new 4,300 square foot clubhouse, gourmet kitchen, great room, fitness center, showers, laundry. The pool and hot tub are coming soon. Pickleball courts, playground, dog park, recreational trails for miles. I mean, it's really awesome stuff. So the phase 2 grand opening this weekend features 21, just 21 extra large RV lots, complete with water, power and sewer. Grand opening pricing starting at just $79,900. 800. The showings fill up quickly, so make sure you schedule yours. Reserve now, 800-422-6009, 800-422-6009, NatchesRVResort.com. It's happening. Oh, it's happening. The city of Seattle is potentially, okay, maybe I should say it's maybe happening, is thinking about walking back a horrible policy that people with common sense told them would be a horrible policy, would absolutely backfire. And now, because we have a more moderate makeup on the Seattle City Council, they are acknowledging that said policy had the opposite of its intended impact, and they think that they're going to undo it. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. So under the more progressive old makeup of the Seattle City Council, of course, they were always about raising wages and increasing taxes, and this will help the working class. And then they didn't consider how some of those policies would actually hurt the working class. Like when you raise wages too fast, too high, you have some employers who aren't making any more money and they have to make a decision. Well, I'm just going to cut their hours, or I'm going to have to lay them off. I can't afford to do that. Or I'm going to have a robot do their job or something like that. And so then you went from someone who had a decent hourly wage to someone who didn't have a job. And that's the failure when it comes to economics that some of these progressives and even socialists like Shama Sawant would make. And the same on taxation. I mean, it has the same effect on a business. When you target Amazon for taxation and Amazon decides it's going to start moving thousands of jobs over to Bellevue, who are you hurting? Well, you're hurting the entire ecosystem of small businesses that relies on the workforce that Amazon brought in, you know, coffee shops that have to close, restaurants who have to close. So in your, you know, enthusiasm to help working class people with it, which I think is a very noble goal, but you're doing it in a way that's actually going to hurt them. And you had these progressives who just refused to listen to warnings about what would happen. So the same was true with an ordinance that was supposed to help delivery drivers, app delivery drivers. And, you know, you had the they've done this for a lot of these types of workers, like Uber and Lyft drivers and delivery drivers like Grubhub. What am I missing? Uber Eats. Is there a big one I'm missing?
Postmates.
Postmates. Nobody uses Postmates. Oh. But you know what I mean. To say that, oh, DoorDash. We've got to put all... DoorDash. Thank you. It's DoorDash. Got to put all these rules in place, fees in place, increased pay in place, minimum wage and all this stuff to help these workers, you know, make sure that they can make a living without listening to any of the warnings that, hey, this is going to increase cost. All, you know, as soon as it went into effect, here's the article from King 5. This was from February of this year. Quote, it's definitely backfiring. Seattle ordinance intended to help app delivery workers is hurting them. And you had these workers who went from making, you know, some of them quoted in the King 5 story. I mean, they like made, do you have a clip of it, Nicole, you were going to play? No. They, you know, we're like, here's what I was making before and here's what I'm making after the ordinance took effect. They're making less money now. And I just don't know what a, like, who will the progressives believe if not the actual workers who are being hurt by it? Like, if you won't believe me or you won't believe, you know, moderates or God forbid any Republicans who pointed out what was going to happen, will you actually believe the very workers you said you wanted to help who are saying, I am making less money now? I'm making less money now. So the new Seattle City Council is apparently willing to actually listen to those workers and to potentially undo some of the damage that's been done. And look, before I get to this story, this is all we should expect of people who are in positions of power and in politics. I'm not expecting you to be perfect 100% of the time. I'm not expecting that you won't make mistakes or pass bad policy. But when it's clear that your policy is hurting people, isn't having the intended impact, do you have a willingness to take a step back and acknowledge that? Are you willing to admit a mistake? Are you willing to take steps to fix a mistake? We went through this with the police pursuit law. There were some Democrats who voted to restrict police pursuits in 2021 who came out and said, I was wrong. State Senator Mark Mullett was one of them, who's now running for governor, who said on the floor in front of everyone, I was wrong and we shouldn't have done that. And I want to help undo it. And he did. So that's all I asked. I don't have to agree with you 100% of the time. So this is really, really good that they're considering it. And I think shows the fact that even when you have different shades of blue in Seattle, just getting a few more moderates, business-minded people in there can really make a hell of a difference. So this from our friends at the Center Square, rollbacks to Seattle gig worker minimum wage law to go before full city council. Council Bill 12-0775 would remove minimum wage adjustments, reduce the per mile rate, and remove the mileage factor from the current minimum wage law, resulting in a minimum payment standard of $19.97 per hour, along with 35 cents per mile for engaged time while driving. Tips would not be included in the minimum payment. The bill would not repeal the minimum wage for gig workers, which is set at a guaranteed gross minimum wage of $19.97. The original pay up ordinance set the minimum wage for delivery drivers at $26.40 per hour without the inclusion of tips. This is from the Seattle City Council President Sarah Nelson. Quote, "This law is clearly not working," she said in a committee meeting. She said the new council bill is an effort to reverse the bad outcomes caused by a flawed law and catalyzed by network companies imposing a new so-called regulatory fee, which caused a drop in customer orders. Common sense stuff. Sarah Nelson sees what's happening, and now she's trying to fix it. All right. And again, that's all you can ask. I don't know if this is going to pass, but I have to imagine that given the statistics, you know, Center Square reported that DoorDash said in a six-week period after the law took effect, the city retailers earned roughly $7 million less than expected. Because it's not just DoorDash, right? We're talking about all of the restaurants that use DoorDash, and they might not have people coming into their brick and mortar, but they've been able to increase their revenue through DoorDash orders. But then when you hit them with like a $5 fee or more, people start to realize that, hey, maybe my order of that pad thai isn't worth $97 to get it delivered to my door. And then that's one less order for that local business. So hopefully, given some of those very clear cut and dry statistics, some of the stories we've heard from the drivers themselves, from the small businesses that are impacted, I hope that this new Seattle City Council can do what's right here. But unbelievable. It does happen, ladies and gentlemen. It does happen. You have even hyper-progressive cities like Seattle that realize, like, well, maybe we did something wrong. Let's make it better. Okay, we have partnered with the Rental Housing Association of Washington to do a weekly segment on Tuesdays to raise awareness for what's happening to landlords in the state of Washington. Other media outlets might sit here and vilify landlords. Oh, what was it? Is it racist? Racist? Oh, you can't say mom and pop landlord. Because that's racist, right. Yes. Now, you won't hear any of that on the Undivided podcast. Landlords, which they call housing providers, they provide a very important service to the state of Washington. We complain all the time about a lack of affordable housing. Well, all of these laws that have, in my opinion, vilified landlords, made it very difficult for them to earn a living off of one or two rental properties that they might have, but also have left some of them in situations where they have someone who is able to take advantage of the system to stay in their units for a year or more and not pay any rent and have their lawyer paid for by the taxpayers, be bailed out by the taxpayers. And so what we want to do through this segment is really encourage people that, and landlords, small landlords in particular, you can stand up for yourself. You have to stand up for yourself and push back against these insane policies. A landlord who has done that, perhaps better than any that we've seen, is Jaskaran Singh. So Jaskaran Singh, his friends call him Jimmy. You might recall, we've covered this a bunch. He's got a house in Bellevue he rents out, and there's been a guy living there, squatting there, that's just what I call it now, for 2 years without paying rent, Sang Kim. And Jimmy got so sick of this, and his friends and neighbors got so sick of this, because Sang Kim has done this before, he's like a nightmare tenant, that they started holding protests every single Saturday outside Sang Kim's house, trying to shame him into either paying rent or leaving. So Jimmy agreed to join us on the show today to talk about a recent check he was given that was supposed to cover back rent, but also about what is happening right now with that property and his just general frustration with some of these laws and regulations. Jimmy, welcome to, can I call you Jimmy?
Yes, that's my nickname. My friends call me Jimmy. It's not the American name, but it was from India only. I brought it here.
Yeah, well, I like that. But it's Jaskaran, right? That's how you pronounce your name? Gotcha. Yeah. So you are not going to have a protest this Saturday, correct? The protests are on pause indefinitely?
Not sure yet. Oh. Like, he didn't pay rent this month, and we gave him a notice on May 6th. I'm not sure what to do. And I have been sending the email to all the leaders almost 2 years now. I'm not getting any response. Only few replied. Few are saying, sorry, it's happening to you. But nobody is ready to take responsibility. I went to Olympia. Olympia say it's a legal matter. When it go to commissioners are saying, you should go to Olympia and tell them your story. It has been, system has been upside down. I moved here, like I got my citizenship last year, and this country, I'm very thankful to this country. It has given me lot more than I expected. Lot of love, lot of friends. And I'm a regular American guy. I love hiking, biking, snowboarding, and regular things. And I have two boys and a dog, and we are happy family, and we need basic things. Safety, protection of our assets, and law and order for equal for everyone, justice for all. Yes.
Not too much to ask for. I did not realize that. I did not realize he had not paid rent this month. So you go through this two-year ordeal. You get a check cut to you to cover back rent, correct? And you've cashed the check and the check cleared?
Yes.
And that was paid by whom?
King County Bar Association.
Let's talk about that before we talk about what's going on now and what do you do moving forward. So okay. You get this check after two long years of dealing with this. What was the check? How much?
It was 47,000, and which we add 4,400, which is April rent. So around 52,000.
And did that cover what was owed?
It covered 11 months rent. And last year also, it's happening second time. This will be his fourth eviction case I'm filing.
Wow.
So this is not a first landlord issue. He has done to previous landlords, and he openly said in the video that I don't understand the system here. I totally agree with him. I don't. He taught me how the system works here. And I am shocked that nobody is raising the voice. I have been reached out from all over the United States. Everyone in our temple I talked, at my work, I'm getting a support from everyone. And this is a shock for me. Yeah.
So it's the second time the King County Bar Association has paid his tab?
Yes.
How do you feel about that? Because obviously you want to be made whole. You know, you're owed all this money. But the fact that, and I assume that they're writing that on behalf of the King County Housing Justice Project, which gets taxpayer resources. So how does it feel to get the money from them and not from Mr. Kim?
So the response I get from the leaders is it's a personal matter. It's not a personal matter. I am individual. I'm paying my lawyer. Every time I call him, it's charged. And they're breaking my family, breaking me, and they're saying, and they're protecting. With my taxpayer money, they paid my rent. With my taxpayer money, they paid his lawyer. With our taxpayer lawyer, his utilities are paid. With our taxpayer money, he's getting groceries. I don't know what crime I did. I was a tenant too for 6 years. I worked hard and I bought my first house. Then we worked our second and third. That's, I don't invest in stocks. That's a basic, I invest in real estate with my partners or my friends. So that's what America is, to work hard, live your dream, enjoy your life, respect all cultures. First Amendment, like the freedom of speech, freedom of religion. That's what my principles are.
You know, and now he's been, you know, he's had this back rent that's been paid for him by taxpayers, essentially, twice. And now you're saying he has not paid, it's May the 14th, he has not paid May rent. Do you think he's just been taught that, hey, I don't have to pay rent because nothing will happen and someone will pay my bill for me?
Yes, he knows, his family knows, I don't know what's supporting him. How can a normal person live like that? How can what message he's giving his kids? What is message he giving to a neighborhood, school? It's all full of lies. There's no common sense. I'm not there should be a difference between right and wrong. That's it. There was a two anti-harassment case against me. Asking a rent, I don't want to see him all my life. Leave my house and go away wherever you want to live. I don't know.
So you held these protests that, you know, neighbors and friends came to, and also people who didn't even know you, you know, who were just frustrated for you, that had been coming Saturday after Saturday. And there were some on the left who said, oh, this is harassment, this is too far. Did you have politicians who asked you to cease and desist those protests?
Yes, they were saying that it's the same answer. It's a legal matter and we should go through a legal channel. I was telling the legal system is broken. There's a flaw in the system. People are milking this system and we need to stop that. We should give a strong message. Only people who need help from the domestic violence or the divorce, any kind of, I want people healthy life, good work culture. I want wish good for everyone. But only people who need should be given money, not the people who intentionally exploit. It's a crime. Basically, he's stealing my money, stealing our taxpayers' money.
Yeah, it's shocking that it's not considered a crime, isn't it?
Yes, I'm shocked. What's going on? Like, yeah.
It's wild. So you're in the process of deciding how to proceed from here, right? Because he hasn't paid rent yet. So you haven't decided what to do now?
No, with all that things, like I'm a human services chair for City of Bellevue, and I met city manager. I have given multiple testimonies to Bellevue Council, and I have went to testimony to King County Council also. And so I have knocked each and every door, and I'm so frustrated. But with that, I'm motivated also. I want to change the system. I'm standing against this injustice. I'm fighting for my children's future, for the future of this country. I have to rise and I have to, I'm fighting. Last week I filed for the state Senate. I'm running for this and it's a lot of work. It was a little bit of rift on my family that which path I'm going, but I was saying, who else will do it?
Yeah,
if I can't always say that, okay, I'll support you, go ahead. People are busy with their life. People don't want to come forward. I don't know what's going on, but somebody has to change. And I want to give them a message that don't take immigrants for granted. Don't use our vote. Don't take us for granted. And we need better schooling. We need better law and order. We need a system for which we came here. And we love this country. I love all faiths. I respect freedom of speech. And I stand against injustice they have done to me.
How much do you love that guy? I cannot believe we haven't had Jimmy Jaskaran Singh on sooner. Just everything he says. And also when we talk about immigration, that's the kind of immigrant I want. In this country, someone who just got his citizenship a year ago. He's volunteering with the homeless. He's going down to Olympia to testify about bills that impact his life. He's running for state senate. He's holding these protests. He's speaking out about what's happening and the wrongs, not just on landlord issues, but in other areas like public safety and education. This guy, he makes me feel like I'm not a good American. Like I need to be doing more. You know, I applaud him for doing something that's difficult, and that is putting yourself out there. And what he went through, it is theft. I mean, 2 years without rent, and then it's the taxpayers who have to cut the check, who, you know, we don't have to, but who someone decides we're going to have to pay for this guy's back rent, not once, but twice. And now he gets $50,000 in debt wiped from his record, courtesy of the taxpayer, and he doesn't even pay rent in May? This is what landlords in our state are dealing with. This isn't right. I would hope that the vast majority of people with common sense, left, right, and center, understand that this isn't right and it needs to be rectified. We can't have these eviction backlogs going on for so long that somebody could be stuck in this situation when it might be their only source of income in retirement. We have to fix this. And I'll also say, because this is a, we do this segment with the Rental Housing Association of Washington. So Jimmy wasn't a member, but he's now going to be a member because he knows all the work that the RHA has been doing and how they help landlords make sure that they have the resources that they need to be able to avoid a situation like this or get out of a situation like this. So this segment was brought to you by the RHA. If you're a landlord, I want you to have this tool at your disposal. It's like $260 a year to be a member of RHA. So you can sign up rhawa.org, rhawa.org. So now because of ordeals, we've spoken to two landlords who were like, I wish I would have joined RHA sooner and had a little help on my side because Jason Roth over in Seattle said the same thing. So rhawa.org. Love Jaskaron. Man, we need to have that guy back on. Just insane what's happening. And maybe they will protest again this weekend because the guy hasn't paid rent and we're almost halfway through the month. But also, what are you spending your money on then? It has to be that he has the money. He just knows he doesn't have to pay.
Oh, cars. Have you seen
his
cars?
Because he's got cars and stuff. And mm-hmm. like you're living. I mean, you have jobs. He said that he was out of a job because of COVID, but it's been, you know, a long time since then. So you're just deciding not to pay. You had $50,000 wiped clean. You're just deciding not to pay. We can't have laws that allow that. We can't have laws that protect him and don't protect someone like Jimmy. It's just insane stuff. All right, but speaking of, we met Jimmy, or we know Jimmy through Wes Jones. So Jimmy's ordeal was happening. Our friend Wes Jones, who sponsors the show, was on talking to us about it. So it's all just a little interconnected world. We talked to a couple Wes Jones clients, Bryce and Carla. They sold their Bellevue home to move to Florida. God bless them. I hope they're having a wonderful time. And we asked them to tell us a little bit about the experience of working with Wes and his team. Bryce said that Wes, you know, they sold their home in January. They weren't sure how much they were going to get for it with interest rates. But Bryce says that Wes helped them get what they wanted by teaching them how the pricing works when you go to sell your home. Bryce, what was it for you?
Just his attention to detail. He was extraordinarily detailed, and he knew our neighborhood and our properties in the neighborhood very well. He gave us a really great comp plan, showed us what other properties were selling for, and most importantly, he helped us to understand the dangers of overpricing. And we thought what we knew we could get for the property, but we didn't, you know, at the same time, he breathed an air of reality into us, said, look, guys, you want to get that out of the property, you're going to need to start at a certain point, and you're going to let the market come to you. And that's exactly what happened. He was exactly right about that. So his knowledge of the market, and his professionalism, and his attention to detail is all that made the difference to us.
Yep, and they were able to sell their home in 7 days, well over list price. So if you're thinking about selling your home, don't choose a real estate agent until you've reached out to our friend Wes. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. A better way to sell your home. Wishing Bryce and Carla all the love in Florida. A little jealousy there.
Yeah, she said they were watching the dolphins outside.
Nice life. Thanks for the invite. No, I'm staying in Washington. We're going to stay and fight here. But that doesn't mean like I vacationed in
for
Florida.
Now.
So we'll vacation in Florida. But we might just show up at your door one day. Bryce and Carla, I'll get your address from Wes.
It might be December.
I guarantee Wes has your address. So I'll get your address from Wes. Oh, anyway. Okay, dipping outside of Washington State, a couple national stories. The polls are looking very good for Donald Trump. That's just the gist of it. In fact, and I don't believe this, my trust of polls varies, right? You have the polling entities that tend to be a little bit more accurate. But in 2016, polling just went out the window. You know, it really did. And so it's hard for me to trust polling. And I certainly wouldn't look at a poll of a candidate that I like that's way up and say, okay, job's done here. We don't have to do anything because they can't be trusted. But when you have so many polls saying the same types of things, right, then you have to, the media has to look at that. And CNN, it was funny. There's all these polls out that are very good for Donald Trump. And CNN, so good for Trump, CNN has to cover it. And they're just mind-boggled by it.
These Sunbelt battleground states, frankly, for the Joe Biden campaign, these numbers are an absolute disaster. The smallest lead is in Arizona for Donald Trump. He's up 6. Look at this, 9 in Georgia, 13 in Nevada. My goodness gracious, my God. That is a huge lead. No Democrat has lost that state since John Kerry lost it back in 2004. How about these Great Lake battleground states? This is something that the Joe Biden campaign can work with. Look, Pennsylvania, Donald Trump up 3, but that's well within the margin of error. Wisconsin, Donald Trump up 1, well within the margin of error. And actually, a Joe Biden lead well within the margin of error, up a point here. This they can work with the Joe Biden campaign. This, the Donald Trump campaign, absolutely loves, and it looks like a lot of the other polling on the Sun Belt battleground.
I love that guy. He's like, oh, look, oh boy, look at this. His accent's funny.
It's very cute.
I might watch CNN just for that guy. He cracks me up. You know, look, things can change. Obviously, Democrats always cook up something to be a shiny object and distracting object. I saw a poll the other day that was shared by a poll aggregate that just pushes out polls online that Donald Trump is winning in Washington. And I'm like, that's how people lose trust in polling. Donald Trump is never going to win in Washington. And if I'm wrong, if November, whatever, what day is the election this year? Does it land on the 6th, 7th? Mm. If I'm wrong, I'll buy you all a steak dinner.
Ooh,
at Daniel's.
Okay, we could have a little steak set up here.
Every single one of you.
I mean, he's got you maybe voting for him.
I'd have to really cash in some savings in 401k to buy you all a steak dinners at Daniel's. And then after that, I might need a place to live because Mike and I will probably have to sell our house to pay for it. So can I live with you? And that's when I go see Carla and Bryce. Trump's not going to win in Washington, but those are pretty consistently bad numbers for Joe Biden.
I think people lie to polls now. I think people just don't take them seriously and they lie. But I think that Washington one must have been done by Semi-Bird's people. Yeah. That sounds like one of their polls.
It was funny because then Semi-Bird had put that poll out and saying, this matches what our internal polling is saying. And I'm like, okay.
Poll.
No, listen. Like, okay. Semi-Bird, if you had an internal polling that said you were up like 70, you know, with 73% or something crazy, you'd release it. That would no longer be an internal poll. That would be an external poll that you'd be putting out there. And no, the straw polls don't count. I'm sorry. You know, we don't decide elections based on how many of 13 people who showed up to an event put a straw in a bucket for you.
I just don't.
Anyway, but if you did, that's fine. Like, you do you, you know?
Yeah.
I support your right to vote for whoever tickles your fancy.
I kind of wish that Ferguson and Biden were doing a little bit better, because I think it kind of, people tend to relax and not, you know, forget to get to the poll that day because they're so, you know, assured that their candidate's already a shoo-in.
Right.
Just don't worry about it.
I think that's what happened with Hillary.
Doing just fine.
Hillary voters, for sure, there was had to be a touch of that, because all the media was like, no, not going to happen. 1% chance.
I really think people underestimated how much people despise Hillary.
Hey, I voted for Hillary.
Yeah, I wouldn't shout that to the masses, sister.
Who cares? People know that I have come a long way from the brainwashing that I had when I got out of college and was in liberal media. So I'm not, it's fine. I'll admit it. Like, I voted for Hillary Clinton. Either you'll take me as I am or you won't take me at all. A lot of people in the chat saying, I'm in for stakes. But only that's if Trump wins Washington, which isn't going to happen. Hey, what?
You've challenged us now. Give us hope. We're going to try.
Yeah.
We want some steaks.
You know how expensive Daniel's is? Like, Mike and I went there for an anniversary or something. It was like $350 for two of us.
I know. You probably should have just said, I'll buy you steaks, and not specified where they were coming from.
Daniel's. Maybe through this we can get Daniel's to be a sponsor on the show.
There we go.
Because that's a sponsor I'd want.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even take money. I would be like, free meals.
Just steaks.
just feed steaks, us. And mashed potatoes, because I don't do anything without mashed potatoes. Wow, we're super off track. UNC Chapel Hill Board of Trustees has voted, get this, to divert DEI funding and redirect it to campus public safety. Man, see, common sense prevails. We just need little wins. Little wins turn into big wins. So little wins, especially on any college campus in the entire country, is a very, very good thing right now. UNC Chapel Hill Board of Trustees has voted to divert $2.3 million away from DEI programs and into public safety. The unanimous vote occurred at a special Board of Trustees meeting Monday. It's unclear if the diversion of funds would lead to layoffs. One can only hope. Marty Kotis is vice chair of the board's Budget and Finance Committee, which initially introduced and passed the Flex Cut Amendment. Without citing specific examples, he called DEI programs discriminatory and divisive. Wow, you don't say. Quote, it's a shame that the town of Chapel Hill refuses to aid our local university police when called upon, said the chair of the Budget and Finance Committee. The $2.3 million would be added to help what is probably a budget issue with respect to how much we are having to spend on law enforcement right now. I mean, look, and you look at it is, it's discriminatory, it's divisive. As a university, you should be able to carry out all the fundamental underpinnings of what you claim DEI is about without having DEI departments and DEI agencies and actively discriminating against people. You want a welcoming campus environment where it's a meritocracy, which we should all want in this country, where people gain admission on the merits of their academic achievements, even their athletic achievements. You know, there are a variety of reasons why someone might be a fit for your university, but DEI and paying someone six-figure salaries to make sure that your university is acting more racist towards white people is insane. And I'm glad that some universities are starting to realize it. All right, we'll get to questions and comments in your daily show poll coming up next. First, we played a clip on the show last Thursday of Jared Bernstein, Biden's chief economic advisor, being asked about something called modern monetary theory. And it was being shared all over the internet because he seemed to have no clue what he was talking about, which isn't a surprise because he got his bachelor's degree in music and then he went on to be Biden's chief economic advisor. But this idea of modern monetary theory and this debate over it is interesting. It's the idea, generally speaking, that the U.S. just prints its own money. So why do we even borrow in our own currency? Why don't we just eliminate our national debt and print our own money? There are people who actually support doing that and don't understand what the consequences would be. Our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital understands those consequences very well.
So MMT suggests that rather than using interest rate policy to rein in inflation, you should use tax adjustments up and down. They probably have a point about that. But then they go on to say, this is the way it works. And you go, no, no, no. This is the way it works when you're the world reserve currency. Okay. The problem is this will be what gets you from being or gets you kicked out of being the world reserve currency. And when you're not the world reserve currency, you're going to have some problems on your hands. It, you know, it's sort of like the guy that jumps off the 100-foot skyscraper and you ask him in the middle, you know, how are things going? He's halfway down. He goes, so far, so good. Right?
Yeah.
Now, we all know 50 floors down, he's going to have a rude awakening. But that's kind of that cognitive dissonance in the middle where, you know, everybody's like, hey, it's not bothering us so far.
Yeah, not bothering us so far, but it will. Look, if you want someone to manage your retirement, make sure your retirement isn't overexposed to risk, who actually has a brain and sees these things for what they are, I recommend Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. He also hosts the Know Your Risk Radio podcast, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. I suggest having a free portfolio review with Zach and his team just to make sure you're not overexposed to risk. You only get one retirement. You do not want to put it in jeopardy. So you can schedule that free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Okay, I put a little saucy daily subscriber show poll in today just because I was pondering it. We have been critical of the media and I'm always uber critical of King 5 News. And I wondered if you guys feel the same way, if any of that, if my perception is tainted by having been in that environment. And also sometimes we refer to reporting from local TV stations. We try to do that as little as possible. But I asked you guys, here's really stirring the pot in our daily subscriber show poll. Which Seattle-based TV station do you believe is most credible? King 5, Cairo 7, Como 4, or Fox 13? What I found interesting, which is sometimes, oftentimes not the case, across all three, Nicole, of our subscription platforms, Patreon, Locals, and X,
yes,
everyone put them in the exact same order in terms of credibility. Do you want to guess the order?
From least
credible to most credible. What do you think?
From least?
Least to most.
Oh, I'm going to get in trouble for the middle probably. But King, Cairo, Como, Fox.
100%. That's what everybody did. Which I am not sure between Como and Fox. I think Como's been doing some pretty good stuff. But Fox tends to care a little bit more about public safety coverage, which
is
nice.
David Rose. We all love and trust David.
We all love David Rose. He's going to tell it as it is. So yeah, that's the order every single subscriber platform put it in. King least credible than Cairo Como Fox 13 News. Let's read a little bit of what you had to say, shall we? Kevin Knowles says none. They all have an agenda to spread propaganda. Bob on Local says, hard to say, Brandy. It seems to change day to day. And, you know, it is true. Like, sometimes they all have misses. Like, real hard misses. And, and we'll talk about it. Mac52, who has a cute picture of their doggo as their profile pic on Locals. None of them. Better question, which would be the least credible? Well, by the poll, it's sort of like, you just take it and whoever got the least votes. So King 5 News. Winton Dillard, I think when Essex Porter retired from Cairo and Brandy Cruz left Q13, she was great. She was a really exceptional journalist. That was the beginning of the unbiased news landslide. Let's read one more because I'm just having fun with this. Our friend Kathy Lambert says, I don't really find any of them credible as they have so many biases that they don't disclose and report as if backed by established fact. Today's Wall Street Journal on science lies is frightening. While not surprising, journalism is not what Walter Cronkite or Barbara Walters offered. Luckily, we have Cruz and Cho. Well, I appreciate that. That's very nice. Is that your personal opinion, Nicole?
Yeah, that's probably pretty close.
Pretty close.
And yeah, like I said, I love David Rose, so I trust a lot of David Rose. The rest there, it's not that I don't trust them, it's just that they don't provide a lot. So I think Como does a good job providing.
One of the other issues is just local TV is they don't give their reporters time to actually do journalism. It's like, you know, press conference or it's a press release coverage and chasing, you know, sirens and stuff. All right, let's get to questions and comments for today. Did you get that picture in?
Yeah, my computer is kind of freaking out here, but I got it. Nicole's just really go to one question and then I'll have it.
Nicholas Horrock said, local prosecutors won't actually prosecute crimes, but for AG Bob, they will. That seems fair. Yep. Really seems like there's two standards of justice and who's deserving of justice, doesn't it? E says, no one is surprised by AG Ferguson's temper tantrum and bullying tactics. Kathy McDonald, I'm sorry, Brandy, maybe you can look back and see how entitled he feels, but most of us have always seen it. I think you were more concerned about your morals yesterday than seeing the big picture. I respect and agree with you about a lot of things, but for me, you were way off base. Yeah, I mean, I just disagree. I mean, at some point, who's going to be the one to have a moral compass, and do we just continue? Yeah, there's a lot of arguments that Democrats break the rules, so unless we want to keep losing, we have to break the rules, too. Look, I mean, I still believe that there are people who can be sold on good policy and good ideas. And maybe if we spent less time trying to break the rules and less time trying to fearmonger and manipulate voters and fight the other party and all this stuff and talk about our ideas for improving people's lives, maybe that would become the way that people could win elections. But right now, both parties win elections by fearmongering, by pushing hate and division and not talking about how to problem solve. So maybe let's try it. Let's try it. See if it works for once. Let me see. Todd Welch says, how is AG Bob's press conference not election intimidation and interference? Mary S., I think the Bob Ferguson shtick may have played out exactly as intended. Perhaps the goal was to create the reaction achieved from AG Ferguson? I don't know. I think that's given the whole ordeal too much credit. Matthew Cook said, Brandy, great job on Tommy Lahren's podcast today. Yeah, I was on Outkick with Tommy Lahren this morning. Matt Gilbert, whenever I go on with her, in my comments on Twitter, it's like, oh, so much for being a moderate and an independent. It's like, you know, it's from the left.
You're not supposed to talk to anybody.
I can only talk to people who they deem like ideologically acceptable. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a funny conversation because I was on, you know, she just has guests to just do like a round robin on all sorts of different topics. And then we got into my vote for Hillary Clinton.
I know. You just casually mentioned it.
And then she was like, I have to go back to that. And then about Donald Trump and all this stuff. So we ended up just having a funny conversation where I unloaded all my political baggage. And it was entertaining. Mm-hmm. On the Seattle City Council, Sean Bell says, the last activist council never understood economics. Yep. Which is scary because Shama Sawant was an economist. That was her profession.
Well, I actually think they do. And I think that's by design.
And they just don't care?
They don't enjoy capitalism. They don't enjoy anybody making money.
Yeah, that's true.
They want society to rely on government.
100%. You're right. Good point. Because they want to push us into socialism. So let's just make everything not function. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have bread lines and all of that stuff. That's what Independent Many United said. They're not making mistakes. This is all by design. They're doing exactly what they intended to do. Mm-hmm. On Jimmy, the Bellevue landlord, Ron Bishop said, too bad Jimmy's not running for governor. He's running for state Senate, though. Isn't that cool?
That's fun.
He decided to run for state Senate. I love that. Before we get to our closing sanity check, can I make a pitch for our merch page? because sure. Joe Kaiser sent us a picture of him in D.C. He posted this picture on Locals this morning. He said, "Repping Undivided in D.C. with his Common Sense 2024 shirt." So just so you know, we had it exclusive to subscribers for just a few days. But right now on our merch store, if you put in the promo code SANITY24, SANITY, the number 24, you get 25% off of our Common Sense collection. So you got to get it before mm-hmm. we just have to give the t-shirts to like a third world country because it was not 2024 anymore. We want to make sure you're repping your 2024 shirts and calling for Common Sense.
They deserve better. We'll give them better
before
t-shirts.
Before it's too late.
They deserve better. I mean, what do you mean? An old t-shirt. I mean, if it's 2025.
You just cross it out and put 2026.
I always feel bad for them that they get our leftover Super Bowl shirts that
right of the losing losers. Teams. No, I think that's hilarious. You know, look. So anyway, Sanity 24 is now live on our website for everyone. So if you want 25%,
and when you go
off,
there looking for a mug and it says sold out, no, we're not getting more of those mugs. Sorry.
No, they were too much of a pain in the a to ship.
Yeah.
Not doing it. Not doing it again.
And if no we end more up- sizes of the ones that are sold out. Sorry. Every time we say this, I get a bunch of, why isn't there this size? No. Can you, are well, you going to restock? No.
No. Nothing's not being restocked because it's 2024 stuff. Yes. But we are, however, going to come up with new collections yes. after this one's sold out. But I'm sorry. We're not going to stock a bunch of new stuff until we sell the old stuff. But it's yeah. not old yet. It's still
limited
2024.
Limited edition.
Limited edition. Buy our shit, okay?
Oh, wow. Unnecessary swear jar.
Buy it. No, I'm just kidding. No, but I love getting pictures from you guys wearing your... In fact, Matt Gilbert was out at UW wearing his Common Sense shirt, which I thought was great.
Yeah.
You got to rep the Common Sense. It's funny. When you know, somebody says...
I just have to say this because you said it so many times. How do you say UW? You say it.
UW.
It's so funny. There's like you say it with a weird... that you put the emphasis on the U...
UW.
No, there you go. Then you did it right. Now you did it right. That's funny. I never noticed that until the last 2 days.
Maybe you do it wrong. I don't
maybe
know.
Maybe I do.
I'm real judgy, Nicole. What was I anyway. Just talking about? I was hawking
Matt Gilbert.
Talking our merch. Oh, Matt Gilbert. And then when somebody comes up to you and says, "I like your t-shirt," you can say undividedpod.com. Join our Common Sense Sanity team.
Right.
I think our next collection will be Team Sanity. So you have Team Sanity gear.
Okay.
Should we get to our closing sanity check? Speaking
of Team Sanity. Okay. Well, I guess maybe it'll depend on who wins in November. Like our next.
And then
collection.
It'll be Team Sanity, but then there'll be a little box that says, "But who'd you vote for governor?" And then if they choose the wrong person, I'll say, "Not you."
Yeah, exactly.
Team, not you.
Team Sanity. Yes. If you voted for Ferguson, you're not a part of this.
You're not allowed to purchase a shirt from us.
I like it.
Anyway, okay. Let's get to our closing sanity check, where we're going to hear one of the pressing issues that one of Washington's United States senators is laser focused on. I had to laugh because I saw this clip sent out from our friend Representative Travis Couture, who said our state is in the midst of several crises around out-of-control crime, cost of living, housing, drugs, homelessness, and childcare, and Senator Patty Murray is tackling menopause awareness.
Menopause is not a bad word. It's not something to be ashamed of, and it is not something Congress or the federal government should ignore. Menopause is something that every woman goes through. So there's no reason that any woman should feel like she's going through it alone or like she can't find reliable information or the healthcare answers and options she needs. And there is no excuse for shortchanging this issue when it comes to federal dollars. So we're going to be working hard to build support for our legislation, pass it into law, and make menopause a part of the conversation until it finally gets the spotlight and resources that it needs.
Make menopause great again.
I didn't know it was so underfunded.
Oh, I'm sure every single woman is painfully aware that they're going through menopause and that every other woman of a certain age is going through menopause as well. I don't think they feel alone on that particular issue. That has been our sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Are you in menopause yet, Nicole?
No. Don't jinx me.
Oh, anyway, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. And when you are, you don't have to tell us, by the way. I think. Oh, no.
I don't know if are people keeping it secret? Everybody's like, oh, hot flash, menopause, you know.
Yeah, it's not embarrassing. I think I'll know. UndividedPod.com, you can support the show for just $5 a month if you feel like it. And while you're there, you can buy our shit. Great. See you tomorrow.
Another swear jar.
Yeah, it's already happened. It's done.